This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll review what's going on at the state capitol as lawmakers begin to get rolling in earnest with the 2014 legislative session. We'll also talk about Governor Bobby Jindal being away from the capitol quite a bit as he's on the campaign trail seeking the presidency of the United States. Jan Moeller of the Louisiana Budget Project, formerly of the New Orleans Times-Picayune, will comment on the happenings not so far from us. Also, the well-known composer, Gwyneth Walker, coming this way to our community. We will talk with her about her distinguished career and her appearances in this area. All this, but now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your local number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org. Frank Barnett producing, and in studio is Jan Moeller, the man who the last 2.5 years has led the Louisiana Budget Project, formerly with the Times-Picayune, and his former colleague Robert Travis Scott, who is head of PAR, has delayed his appearance until Monday. So we'll talk with Robert Monday, and we've got Jan today, and he's a man who's following the Capitol and other things. I saw him at the Edwin Edwards congressional announcement the other day. What'd you think of the Cajun Prince?
Well, I couldn't stay away. That was the old reporter in me. It was a great announcement. He seems like he still has a lot on the ball. You know, I'm not a political prognosticator, so who knows how he'll do in the race, but it certainly makes it a much higher profile race than it was before.
Well, Jan Moeller, did they make politicians like this in your home state of Pennsylvania?
Absolutely not.
No?
Not even close.
No? You mean Arlen Specter was not in the same league with
Arlen
Edwin
Specter,
Edwards?
No, and neither was John Hines, although we did have Rick Santorum, who was probably the polar opposite of Edwin Edwards.
That's true. And and Rick Santorum, I think, still wants to be president of the United States, as does the governor of Louisiana, Bobby Jindal. Now, I saw a flurry of editorials from people who were well-respected and good writers, people like Bob Mann and even Albert Samuels at Southern University, saying that Edwin Edwards should not be running and really discounting any chance he has of winning this race. But that said, and they may be right, I think he has a better chance of winning the congressional race than Bobby Jindal does of winning the presidential election.
Well, that's an excellent question. I don't know if I agree with that, Jim. I think I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and they said something that made a lot of sense, which is, you know, nobody's odds of becoming president are good. But
yeah,
I think
said that,
Bobby Jindal's odds in the Republican field, I think, are as good as anyone's. It's a completely wide open race at this point, and it's an enormous undertaking for anybody to win the nomination of their party and get to the general election. We're 2 years out. When we were 2 years out in ahead of the 2008 election, almost nobody would have predicted Barack Obama would lap Hillary Clinton and become president, let alone get elected to two terms. So I really think at this point, handicapping who's going to be left standing at the end of the primary cycle is an interesting game. I indulge in it as much as anybody. But I got here in 2003, in March of 2003. It's been just about 11 years that I've been in this state. And when I got here, Bobby Jindal was at 2% in the polls. He had just started his race for governor, and I remember a lot of the old hands around the Capitol, including Robert Travis Scott, my dear friend, and lots of other folks who had been around Louisiana politics for years, saying quite forcefully that Bobby Jindal didn't have a chance, and the next governor was going to be somebody like Richard Ayoub.
It was Kathleen Blanco. Bobby Jindal did not win that year.
But he
ran first in the primary, but he had the Governor Foster political machine behind him, and he raised gobs of money, and that often makes a difference. But Bobby Jindal has never been incapable of raising money for president in his quest to be the leader of the free world as well. But Elliott Stonecipher, he gave him 1% chance of being elected president. Maybe it's a little better than that, but at this point, probably less than 10% chance of being elected president. And I'm saying that I think there's a greater than 10% chance that Edwin Edwards will be elected to Congress in 2014.
I don't disagree with that assessment at all. And who knows what's going to happen when the primaries get underway? We know that Bobby Jindal obviously has some liabilities. He's never going to be the best public speaker in the world. And he's obviously not as popular as he has been in Louisiana. But like you said, he is a formidable fundraiser. And if he sets his mind to running for president, I think we can know he's going to work at it 18 hours a day, 6 or 7 days a week for as long as it takes. Mm-hmm. And I think you can't discount the power of willpower when it comes to something like this. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm not making any predictions at all. But I think in the Republican field, as it stands today, the mythical Republican field, because nobody has officially declared, he's in that group of 7 or 8 candidates, potential candidates, mm-hmm. who could feasibly win the nomination.
And then he would have to beat a formidable Democrat to win the election. And Democrats in national elections have won the popular vote 5 of the last 6 times out. So Bobby Jindal is going way right to try to get Republican support, and that could ultimately hurt him if he got the nomination, because they will try to characterize him as an extremist.
I think you're absolutely right, Jim, and I think the math for anybody who, the electoral math for anybody who gets the Republican nomination is going to be very challenging in 2016, because a lot of the swing states are starting to trend blue. And so there are some states that any Republican candidate is going to have to flip. States like Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Colorado, and Florida that have been trending Democratic in the last few elections, are going to have to flip back to the Republican side. Jindal mm-hmm. seems to be following the same script that George W. Bush used in 2000, which was to kind of appeal from the start to the base of the Republican Party, to religious conservatives. That seems to be his message right now. I'm assuming his hope is that if he can secure that base, then he can start to move gradually to the center and attract maybe more mainstream Republicans. That's the recipe, at least, that worked for the last successful Republican presidential candidate, and I'm betting he hopes that that's going to work for him.
297-5633 is your number if you'd like to join the conversation. Jan Moeller of the Louisiana Budget Project, depicted by Governor Jindal as a far-left organization. In fact, we commented on this show when you got the job. He made comments that were not very flattering about your group. It would be like you making comments that weren't flattering about his party affiliation or his Believe in Louisiana nonprofit thing. But he took after Jan Moeller. He took it to you. Are you still bruised?
No, I got over that pretty quickly. And look, I respect the governor, and I try very hard to keep my disagreements with the governor on policy issues. It's no secret that we take a very different view on most policy issues than this governor. But we also respect his right, and we don't want to make this personal disagreements. There's enough nastiness, I think, in the political discourse out there, and I don't want to be contributing to making it nastier. I think we can all make our case for the policies we think are right and do so in a respectful manner. And I think the governor, I've known the governor for a long time. I don't see him as much as I used to, of course, but He was joking around at that point. He definitely took a dig at our organization. I don't think it's a secret that he probably doesn't like some of the things we support, but he has a right to his opinion.
Yeah, didn't he say it was a George Soros organization of some kind or something like that?
Well, if you don't want to attack our message, then you can attack some of our funders. And again, he has a right to do that. We disclose all our funders on our webpage. If you want to see who funds our organization, we're proud of all of them. But we're an independent nonprofit governed by an independent board of directors, and that's who decides on the issues that we pursue. So we're not beholden to any donor.
Well, the governor is certainly eager to criticize his perceived opponents, from Jan Mower to President Obama. He called him out at the White House. He waited until he got outside, though. He didn't call him out face-to-face. And he's taken aim at the president, even questioned his intelligence at that CPAC meeting. I would say that, I don't know, I would say the president's a pretty smart guy. He may not like his policies, but I think he's every bit as smart as our governor.
I would absolutely agree with that assessment, Jim. President is smart, and I think this is kind of the silly season politically, and the governor is obviously trying to get his name out on a national level, and I think he's been doing a pretty effective job of that. Just judging from my friends in other states who seem to be noticing that Governor Jindal is putting his name out there and trying to get out there as much as possible. And again, I think the message at this point is aimed really at conservatives in the Republican Party, whose support you would need to build a base for a presidential run. I thought it was very interesting. You know, in Louisiana, we've kind of assumed for so long that he's running for president, even though for the longest time he would kind of dodge the question and say that he has the job he wants. And then finally, I think it was last week or the week before, he did an interview with Politico in Washington where he was talking about this new PAC that he was setting up. And at the end of it, this interview that Politico did, they asked him if he was running for president. And the governor said, oh, yeah, of course, everybody knows we're thinking about doing this. We haven't completely made up our mind yet, something to that effect. And it was so unnewsworthy that it kind of got buried at the bottom of the story. But it was, to my knowledge, the first public acknowledgement from this governor that he is actively considering a presidential run.
All right. And Tara asked the question, hasn't the governor been running for the last 6 years for president, and haven't his policies been indicative of this?
I don't want to ascribe motives to his policies. I think he's probably doing what he thinks is best for Louisiana and hoping that record will make him an effective candidate for the nomination. I respectfully disagree policies.
For example, not taking the Medicaid money. Is that something that is good for Louisiana, or is it good for his political aspirations?
Look, I think that's been one of the most tragic mistakes that this administration has made. We have the opportunity to get almost $16 billion from the federal government over the next decade to accomplish something that politicians and officials of both parties have been saying for years is the key to ending our health disparities, and that is to get people covered. And this money is public dollars that would be used to buy private coverage for people who can't access health insurance in today's market. This would undoubtedly not just be good for public health, but it would be good for the economy. It would create jobs in every corner of the state. And the governor inexplicably continues to turn his back on this money. And my real disappointment here is what you're seeing now around the country is a lot of conservatives, a lot of Republican governors who disagreed with the Affordable Care Act and who don't think Obamacare was the best way to go, are looking at the math and saying, we really want to find a way to take advantage of this opportunity. And they're negotiating deals with the federal government to kind of adopt a state version of Medicaid expansion. Here in Louisiana, we have a governor who understands health policy as well as any Republican in the country. I mean, he was the secretary of DHH, and he was a top policymaking official at the Department of Health and Human Services in Washington. He understands Medicaid, and if anybody could negotiate a good deal for Louisiana, it's Bobby Jindal. But he has continued to turn his back on this opportunity, and that's a real shame. The motives behind that I can't speak to, but I think from a policy perspective, it's a tragic mistake that this governor has made.
All right. Well, John Kennedy, the state treasurer, who often disagrees with the governor, agrees with him on Medicaid, saying he's doing exactly the right thing. And Robert Travis Scott, your dear friend and former colleague from PAR, has also given indications that he believes the governor is on the right track. not accepting the Medicaid money spelled out in Obamacare that the state has said, we're not taking, we don't want it, it's dirty money. Back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Jan Moeller, who heads the Louisiana Budget Project, a nonprofit organization that's one of these think tanks, I would say a left-of-center perspective. He is with us, and he is no fan of the governor's policies on Medicaid and has taken exception to the governor on some other issues as well. But covered him for many years, liked him, and they have exchanged pleasantries and some insults from time to time. 297-5633. Bruce and Walden. Good morning, Bruce. You're on WRKF.
Yeah, hello, gentlemen. I really respect the work that Jan does at the Budget Project. It's been extraordinarily helpful to those of us who are trying to push different policy directions. But one thing that might make Kindle's behavior less inexplicable is the millions that are being poured into Louisiana by the Koch brothers to defeat Medicaid expansion. I wonder if Mr. Moeller could comment on that.
Well, that's a great question, Bruce. The Koch brothers, who are the two billionaires from Wichita, Kansas, who are very conservative and have been spending an awful lot of money around the country trying to influence races. They recently, it's my understanding, and I know this just from media accounts, opened an office in Louisiana and circulated a pledge around the legislature asking legislators to pledge to never vote to expand Medicaid in any form or fashion. Now, I was actually very encouraged last week. I think the Associated Press did a story. They went back and asked how many people had actually signed this pledge, and very, very few had done so. So I think, you know, I'm not always encouraged by the work of our legislature, but in this case, I was very glad that so few of them decided not to sign away their vote to an out-of-state organization and instead decide to represent what their constituents may want, or at least keep an open mind on this issue. We know it's going to be a hard political road to get anything passed under this governor because he's been so unequivocally opposed to covering low-income working adults. But at least the legislature is keeping an open mind on this issue, most legislators, and that provides some hope for the future. We're going to have a new governor in a couple of years, and this issue is not going away as much as some people would like it to.
297-5633. Thank you, Bruce. Rick Causey writing, does Governor Jindal ever go off script? He says, I've never really heard him speak in a manner that doesn't sound rehearsed. Is that fair?
He is very disciplined as a public speaker. I think in private situations, he does go off script like anybody else. But as a public speaker, no, he's not the most extemporaneous person in the world. He sticks to his talking points very well. And I think that's one of the things that's exasperating if you're a reporter trying to cover him and trying to get questions answered because he is very, very scripted. But I think message discipline is also something that has served politicians well over the years. It reduces right. The chances that they're going to make some kind of gaffe that can follow them around for years.
Story today, it's actually in a column in the New York Times from Maureen Dowd saying the Los Angeles mayor, Garcetti, has been working with Governor Jerry Brown to provide tax inducements that would stem the exodus of film production companies to Louisiana. That's a hot potato here. What do you think about those
I tax incentives? Wish Los Angeles all the luck in the world.
You're saying that's not money well spent?
Right now in this state, you know, we have a tight budget, as you know. We have a tight budget every year, and we never have enough money for education and health care and the things that we think are the building blocks of a strong economy. But we're spending about $250 million of taxpayer money every year to bring in the movie industry, to pay for TV and film productions in this state. We have the most generous subsidy program in the country for films and television, and the Department of Economic Development's own studies show that every dollar we spend on films brings a return to the taxpayer of less than 20 cents. You can contrast that with, for example, money spent on early childhood education. There was a letter in Today's Advocate that said if you a dollar invested in early childhood education produces a return on that investment of about $7 or $8.
All right, but I think economic development will be the positive legacy of Governor Jindal, and he has given away a lot to get people to come here. But Hollywood has come here in droves, and California is now cowering in the on the coast, ready to fight back.
Well, Hollywood is here because we pay them to be here, Jim, and we could pay a lot of people to be here, and they would come. It's simply not a good return on investment. It's great if you're a Hollywood filmmaker because the state pays one-third of the cost of your movie-making activities in Louisiana. But if we want to build up our economy for the long haul, I think a better investment of that money is in early childhood education, in health care, and some of the things that pay a longer-term investment. Right. I just want to say, subject, we spend $250 million a year on films. For $120 million, we could provide universal pre-K to every four-year-old in Louisiana. I suggest.
All right, Jonathan and Lafayette, you're on with Jan Moeller. Jonathan, good morning.
Hey, Jim, how you doing? Hey, I've been saying this for a little while now. Do you think that the reason why Jindal kind of won't address the issue of Medicaid expansion is because, I mean, a lot of people aren't really kind of educated in the state on what actually, you know, is going on, and coupled with the fact that they don't really like Obama's policies anyway, that he's kind of counting on this for his presidential aspirations.
Again, that gets to the governor's motives, and I don't know what is in his heart, what's in his mind when he decides to do this. I'm just very disappointed that somebody who is supposedly one of the brightest conservative minds in healthcare policy won't even come to the table and negotiate a deal when you have other conservative governors. In Indiana, Governor Mike Pence, who was a Republican congressman, extremely conservative, voted against Obamacare. He is now at the table with the federal government trying to negotiate a deal to accept this money to cover people in his state in an Indiana model. The governor of Arkansas has done this. The governor of Ohio has done this. Even the governor of Florida. Now, he couldn't get it through the legislature, but he tried to expand Medicaid. So a lot of Republican governors, conservatives.
But many have not.
But more and more governors are coming to the table and deciding that the math on this is simply too good to pass up, that this is an opportunity to get federal money. We're paying the taxes to the federal government right now, and here's an opportunity to get that money back, and instead we're going to be sending it to other states. It just doesn't make any sense.
Charles in Berkeley Heights. Good morning, Charles. You're on WRKF. Hi, Charles.
Thank you. Good morning. I need to comment on the Medicaid and the governor not accepting the money. You've explained it much better than when I started the phone call. When I dialed in, the other governors are finding ways to do this. It's immoral that we don't have the ability to give free health care to people. I realize that there's an answer from the conservatives about our emergency rooms taking care of people that come in.
All right. The governor says the long-term costs would be extreme, and he might be right. But on the other hand, Jan, you've said it, and others have on this show, that the short-term costs are quite minimal. And it actually is not benefiting this governor in his budget.
Well, there are no short-term costs. The short-term, it's a net gain. The legislative fiscal office says that if we took Medicaid expansion, we'd have another $100 million in next year's budget. That's money that could be spent on anything, even film credits, Jim, if you wanted to spend it on that. So the short-term gain, The fiscal office also says that over the first 10 years, the state could save as much as $500 million. Even the Department of Health and Hospitals, Governor Jindal's administration, says the 10-year cost could actually be a $367 million savings
to
the state.
Is this an assault on poor people, largely of whom are African-American? Is that what this is all about?
I don't think it's about race. I think it's about...
Not. Almost everything is about race.
I think it's about the simple prospect of there's money available to provide coverage to low-income working adults who don't have coverage today. And in Louisiana, the other side says, well, we don't need this money because we have a charity hospital system. We have a set of 10 state-owned hospitals where the uninsured can go and they can get in line and they can get care. And we privatized this system. That system has been in place since the Huey Long era, and this governor has doubled down on the charity hospital system when there's a better model out there.
I'm going to read a comment, and we'll move on to another topic. But Leonard Joseph says, because films are produced in Louisiana does not mean they originate here. We are the cheap labor of the film industry. That from Leonard Joseph. And, of course, Jan Mueller's not pleased about these credits that are going to attract Hollywood to Louisiana. Here's another one. Front page, Baton Rouge Advocate. The governor also rejected the money for the rail system from Baton Rouge to New Orleans. And today I see the Baton Rouge Area Foundation, hardly a liberal group, says the service would only cost $262 million. Can this be done without the governor's approval?
If the governor is opposed, I don't see how it gets done. But again, we're down to the last 18 months or so of this governor having much influence over the process, and any attempt to build rail service, commuter rail service between New Orleans and Baton Rouge is obviously a long-term project. So my hope, and I haven't dived into this issue to any extent, but my hope would be that this becomes an issue in the next governor's race, and we have a big public debate about it, because I think there's a lot of people who would like to have that ability to commute between Baton Rouge and New Orleans without a car, and to turn it into more of a super region the way we've seen other regions of the country, like Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Baltimore,
right.
Washington.
Governor also turned down $70 million of broadband federal dollars for Louisiana. This would have had people in areas that are not capable of getting internet capability. They would have been enhanced by this, but the governor said it was a frivolous expense from the government, which is running a huge deficit. Does he have a point?
Again, this is another area where we disagree. I think if you can provide reliable broadband services to rural areas, that would go a long way to making some of these small towns that are struggling economically more viable as places to live and places for businesses to set up shop. So I think that was a mistake on this governor's part.
So he's 0 for 3 with Jan Mueller on the Medicaid, on the rail system, and the broadband. And all of that, without taking a position one way or the other, all of that would have been funded at 90% or more by the federal government.
Absolutely, and we're federal taxpayers here in Louisiana, too. So these are ways that Louisiana would get back the taxes, more of the taxes that we pay to Washington. And again, I am just disappointed that this administration chose not to avail themselves of these opportunities, because these are things that could have helped real Louisianans on the ground, and I wish the decision from the governor would have been different.
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on the air with Jan Mueller.
Yes. Do you think that Governor Jindal's decision-making has in mind those people in attendance at all those Republican debates back in 2012 for the nomination, people who would cheer every time somebody would say something about how poor people had to do without government services or in some way suffer?
You know, I hate to sound like a broken record. I don't know what is motivating the governor, but I think there's no doubt that the Republican Party, the base of the Republican Party today, has gone well to the right of most people in Louisiana, most people around the country. And that's something that any Republican candidate is going to have to deal with, I think, is that
right,
there's
well,
a...
some would say the base of the Democratic Party. In fact, Edwin Edwards said this the other day. The base of the Democratic Party has gone left of the American people. Is that true?
I would disagree with that. I think I think Barack Obama, despite what a lot of people say, is a center-left politician. Let's go back to the fact that his health care plan is Mitt Romney's health care plan.
All right. Nancy in St. Gabriel. Nancy, good morning. You're on with Jan Moeller of the Louisiana Budget Project.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to also mention and remind everyone that the governor also turned down millions of dollars in federal funding to expand access to pre-K in Louisiana. This continues to be an issue. Instead, he decided to try to reform it, and now the people are saying we can't even reform it without more money, which is not available through the state, and millions were turned down from the federal government to actually expand it and increase access.
All right. Thank you, Nancy.
I think that's an absolutely excellent point, and one of the things, you know, people always ask me what have been the effects of these budget cuts. One way this budget has been cut is money for child care assistance for low-income families has been cut by over 50% since 2008. This is money that helps put low-income children in high-quality child care environments so their mothers can go to work and earn a living, and we've cut that more by half, and there wasn't that much to begin with. And again, there's no better investment we can make as a state for the future than to put it into early childhood education. That's money that makes kids more likely to be ready for school, more likely to graduate high school, and it's just a much better investment than most of the things we
spend money on. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Jim. Great subject. Are we letting the House and the Senate off because letting them catch a free ride? All right, the governor's not going to run again. He's going to be gone. House and the Senate does have powers to overrule and to make their wishes known and their constituents' wishes known.
Absolutely, the legislature could choose to act independently, but if you want to override the governor, it takes two-thirds of the House and Senate to get past the governor's veto, and that's a heavy lift in any political environment.
Today, the legislature, a committee, will hear a bill from Katrina Jackson, who is a Democrat and a member of the Black Caucus, was head of it for a while. It may still be. But anyway, she is sponsoring a bill that would require abortion providers in Louisiana to have admitting privileges within 30 miles of a local hospital, and some say this would shut down almost every and maybe every abortion clinic in Louisiana. Is the budget project involved with this at all?
Jim, one of the nice things about being a budget dork is that I get to completely ignore the social issues. And so I'm going to punt on this question.
This
we are not involved in any way, shape, or form.
As a journalist, though, you would acknowledge this one. If it gains any kind of momentum, it's going to get a ton of attention.
It's a very interesting issue. I'll be following it as an individual, but as the director of the Budget Project, I'm going to take a pass on
just
this one,
like
Jim.
Just like you were following Edwin Edwards the other day, who didn't say a word about abortion, but today, this issue that dominated the session back in 1990 with Lewis Elwood, Woody Jenkins sponsoring a bill that would have banned almost every abortion in the state. It got passed. Governor Romer vetoed it. And then another bill got passed. Governor Romer vetoed it. Will history repeat? We'll talk more in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with Jan Moeller, and we'll hear from the fabulous composer Gwyneth Walker in our final comments today. And she is in our midst, so we look forward to that. A few other items to talk about with Jan. This payday lending issue is evident at the Capitol. Will it have any traction?
We certainly hope so. I think there's we are part of a broad coalition of stakeholders who've come together around the concept of capping interest rates on these low-dollar loans at 36% following the lead of a number of southern states like North Carolina, Georgia, and Arkansas that have done the same thing. These lenders, frankly, offer a defective product that traps their customers, most of whom are low-income people with jobs that don't pay a huge wage, in a cycle of debt. And so there's a bill, bills in the House and Senate, that would cap the interest rates, the annual percentage rate that these lenders could charge at 36%, which I would add is much higher than you and I probably pay on our credit cards.
All right. Minimum wage. An effort to raise the minimum wage. In fact, a few different bills are floating about. One, the $9.50. Ben Nevers was on the show. I think that's his. And then another one from Yvonne Dorsey Colomb would raise it above $10. Does the legislature have any stomach for this?
I'm not going to predict what they're going to do, but I think there's going to be a very hearty debate on this issue. Louisiana is one of five states in the country that doesn't have any minimum wage law on the books. We think one of the best ways to reduce poverty is to make sure that people who work full-time, 52 weeks a year at a job, make enough money to keep themselves and a family of three just above the poverty rate, not living in luxury, but enough to afford the basic necessities. And if one way to do that is by raising the minimum wage, we certainly hope that the legislature will give this a fair hearing. Again, there are a number of good bills floating around, and we're looking forward to talking about that issue in the weeks ahead.
Senate panel yesterday advanced legislation to ban the sale of e-cigarettes to people under the age of 18. I doubt that the budget project's involved in this, but a new bill filed for the session from Pat Connick would impose a $300 fine and 8 hours of community service on smokers who throw their cigarette butts on the ground.
Well, as a former smoker and somebody who deeply regrets taking up that habit when I was a teenager, I think any law that keeps nicotine out of the hands of children is a good one. And I probably threw more than my share of cigarette butts on the ground over the years. I'm not proud of it, but maybe a $300 fine would have dissuaded me from doing so. So
I wonder if there'll be a tobacco juice amendment on that.
Maybe Timmy Teeple would be paying a fine.
You said that. I didn't. Timmy Teeple used to chew tobacco in the Capitol, right?
And I think Senator Peterson, who was then Representative Peterson, tried to I think there was a resolution sometime to pass to ban the use of spit cups on the floor of the legislature.
Well, there is decorum. And Jan Moeller played Timmy in the Gridiron Show, and every time he's done so, it's always been with a cup in his hand. And I think that is reflective of what we're talking about. Who are you playing this year?
Well, I have a few roles. We just started rehearsals this week. The show is on the 28th and 29th, the Gridiron Show. There's still plenty of tickets for the Saturday night show. I think Friday is actually almost sold out. One of my roles this year is Kyle Plotkin, the governor's new chief of staff. I have a few other roles. I would encourage people to come out and see Smiley Anders is always in the show. And
Smiley's one of the last journalists who's in the show. You're not a journalist anymore.
There's a lot more former journalists.
That's right. Buddy
kind of
Romer told me he will never go to a Gridiron show because it's the government spoofing the government. He says it should be journalists spoofing the government.
Well, I wish that Press Row was larger. It certainly is not as large as it was when I started.
You wouldn't be in the show. You know, people like my friend Darren Mann, they live for this. This is the highlight of their year.
Absolutely. And we need the former report. We need people like Darren and Meg Casper who actually know how to sing and dance and act, and it makes up for people like myself who have absolutely no theatrical talent but get out there year after year and prove that to a room full of hundreds of people.
Will Darren be playing Schwarzenegger again?
There may be a Schwarzenegger skit, absolutely. It wouldn't be Gridiron without Darren playing Arnold.
But I thought his portrayal of Larry Flint was one of the classic performances in the history of Gridiron.
Absolutely.
Okay. Finally, it looks like the Romer political machine, since I brought up Governor Romer, the Romer political machine and the Jindal political machine are at odds over Common Core. Chaz Romer, who has been latching very closely to the coattails of Governor Jindal, who Chaz is now the head of the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education, says the governor is wrong on Common Core. What do you think?
You know, this is an issue that I would love to have the capacity as an organization to get more into, but we have not studied this closely, and I'm frankly having trouble keeping up with how all the political lines on this issue. There seems to be folks on the left and the right who hate the Common Core, and there seems to be a lot of folks in the middle, Democrats and Republicans, who think it's a good idea and that we ought to go ahead with it. I'll be actually paying attention to the hearings today at the Capitol because it's an issue that I'm interested in learning more about.
Okay. Well, Jan Moeller, we're glad you're still in the state following what's going on, and this time as a pundit for a prominent think tank, the Louisiana Budget Project. Despite the governor's predictions, it stayed around for a while, and doesn't sound like you're going anywhere soon.
I have no plans to leave.
Okay, thank you. We hope to talk with you again very soon.
Thank you for having me on, Jim. It was a pleasure.
297-5633 is your number, and we're joined in studio, or we will be as she comes this way, by Gwyneth Walker, a remarkable composer of national significance, who is in our midst, and Frank Barnett has a sampling of Gwyneth Walker's work as we segue from Jan to Gwyneth. Frank? Gwyneth Walker is with us, who lives in New England and has come this way, a graduate of Brown University, the same alma mater as our governor, Bobby Jindal.
Yes, I know. I get the alumni magazine.
You get the alumni magazine. Is he featured there quite regularly?
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm sure the folks in Providence, Rhode Island, are quite proud that the university has produced a governor of a great state like Louisiana.
Well, we have quite a few notable Brown graduates, but thank you.
More than a few, but the one we know best here in Louisiana is the man who runs the state, Bobby Jindal, who may be, in a few years, may be president of the United States. Is
okay,
there a lot of buzz at Brown about that?
I hope he supports Walker Music then. I'll write him an inaugural piece.
Well, Gwyneth is here with Evan Reuter, and for many years we heard Evan with his grandfather, Carl, who will be on the show tomorrow, the well-known LSU history professor of 46 years, to talk about Crimea and Vladimir Putin. But Evan is involved in this endeavor, getting Gwyneth in our community, and she has a few appearances. And before we hear more from the fabulous Gwyneth Walker, tell us about where she will be in our community over the next few days.
Well, the main event for the community is on Saturday, this Saturday, March 22nd, 6:30 at University Methodist Church, 3350 Dalrymple Drive. That'll be a performance featuring a lot of professional musicians, voice professors from LSU, Pat O'Neill, Lorraine Sims, and then a lot of community mission musicians, such as the Greater Baton Rouge Children's Chorus. Along with that, she gives a master class tomorrow at LSU for vocal students at 1:30, and she'll be spending the day at Southeastern in Hammond on Friday.
So she'll be around, and there will be an opportunity to get to meet Gwyneth Walker. For those who might not have heard all the intricacies about her schedule, do you have a number, Evan, where people can contact you or someone regarding
sure.
this?
Sure. 225-937-0528. Feel free to contact if you want any more information, and we'll be happy to give it to you.
Well, Gwyneth's catalog includes over 300 commissioned works for orchestra, chamber, ensembles, chorus, and solo voice. You've been a busy bee through the years.
I've been writing all of my life, yes.
How did you get into this?
We had a piano in the house, and my father was an inventor, and I'll tell you more about that in a minute, but we had the piano in the house, and I was a little chip off the old block. I went to the piano and started inventing my music.
Your father was an inventor.
Not only that, but I am the great-great-granddaughter of John Baldwin of Baldwin, Louisiana, where we went yesterday, and he, too, was an inventor. So I got to see the old family mansion.
Well, you have a lot in common with Governor Jindal.
Yeah.
You got a Louisiana connection and a Brown connection.
Yeah, so. I have a plantation to visit.
I'm smelling a cabinet post. So you were young when you started.
I did. I taught
myself.
And
you're still young, but you were really young.
Thank you. I was very young. And my whole idea was that I wanted to create music. So even though I can play the piano, it was never to be a concert pianist. It would be a composer.
Right. Now, what you just said, you said you wanted to create music. Mm-hmm. A lot of people want to create music.
Oh.
I would like to, but I don't think I can, at least not in your ability. So what makes a good composer?
Oh, my. Well, composing music is a skill. It's a trade. So you do have to study. You can't just wait to be inspired. You have to learn how to shape your music. It's like architecture. You have to build a good composition. So that makes good. Some composers are born with a gift of melody, and some are not, and they might spend their whole lives trying to learn. And I very fortunately have a gift of melody. So I think it's a natural gift and a lot of training, and then you have to be very persistent.
Are there enough young people like Evan with the same kind of passion that that you had and others of our generation?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. People will always want to make music, write it, and sing it. And I love technology myself. I love computers. But when it comes time for music, you know, you open your mouth and you sing. That is what you do. You don't have the computer sing for you.
Mm-hmm. And Louisiana is a state that has produced some magnificent musicians and singers, mm-hmm. composers.
Not as much in the classical composition as it is in the jazz, if that's what you were
well,
thinking.
Well, jazz and other uh-huh. types of
yeah.
music. Do you look down on people if they're not classical
no,
musicians?
No, it's just, firstly, I haven't been to Louisiana before, so I should keep my mouth shut.
But classical music is considered by some to be a higher calling.
Oh, no, 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 no higher than our own popular folk jazz idiom is wonderful. Couldn't be anything better than that.
Well, if you're a classical performer, usually you can do other things. I don't know that people who are country music artists could fill an auditorium and perform classical music. I don't know that they could. Mm-hmm. Maybe they could. Some, I'm sure a few could, but more than likely the transition would be easier. If you can do classical, you can do pretty much anything.
I see. Okay.
Okay. You're kind of nodding, so well, I guess we have.
I'm listening to that. I'm not a performer, you realize. I'm
just
a composer.
I know,
so.
But you hang out with people who perform, and they have benefited from your work.
Yes.
So
yes.
When you're composing, Gwyneth, do you think about the end product, or is it something that just comes from within you and boom, it's there, and let's see what happens?
I write on commission, on hire. That's how I work. And so I'm always thinking of for whom I'm writing. They are employing me, and they tell me when they'd like to premiere the work, at what sort of an occasion.
Well,
so it doesn't come from just the inner imagination. It's a job for hire.
It's a job, like most anything
it's
else.
It's a wonderful job, but it's done for hire.
So you know exactly what you're doing.
Yes.
And you're like Burt Bacharach, Hal David. they were pretty good. They did very well on hire.
I see. Yeah, they make a lot more money than I do. But I think I'm pretty happy with it.
Well, your first trip to Louisiana,
yeah.
But you spend a lot of time in the South, don't you?
I spend a lot of time in Sarasota, Florida, a place with good music.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the South? I thought some people didn't consider Florida the South.
Yeah, Jim Nickel once told me that Florida wasn't a Southern state, and I love Jim, but last time I checked, it's pretty South.
Mostly I'm New England. I live in Connecticut now. I lived in Vermont for 30 years.
Well, Evan, I'm sure you had to pull some strings, literally, to get Gwyneth here.
Well, it actually was sort of by chance that we met. I had performed a lot of her music here in Louisiana with local choirs. Then I moved to New England through a mutual friend we met, and before you know it, I was performing a new piano concerto by Gwyneth in Massachusetts. And after that, we just hadn't had enough of collaborating together, so we decided Gwyneth should come to Louisiana.
He's very good at organizing.
Yeah. What is the concerto you?
I premiered a concerto called Across the Water, based on folk tunes, which you were mentioning other songwriters and composers like we have here in Louisiana. And I should say, you know, Gwyneth, yes, she composes semi-classical music, but she is, and you'll hear in her music, inspirations from folk music and the American idiom.
Yes, my music does sound very American.
And
yes.
The piece that Evan is talking about, that was not done on commission, or was that also one of your...
No, actually, he was just so good, I just wrote the piece.
You wrote it for Evan.
I did.
Well, we've got quite a duo here.
Yes.
So this could be the start of something big. And Gwyneth, as Evan noted, will be in this area for a few different appearances. We're short on time, but you might want to go through the list again.
Mainly our concert on March 22nd at 6:30, University Methodist Church. That's 3350 Dalrymple Drive. A lot of great performers and a masterclass at 1:30 at LSU tomorrow. And Gwyneth will be spending the day at Southeastern on Friday.
In lovely Hammond. You'll have a good time there, too.
Oh, good.
Hopefully you had a good time here.
Yeah.
And we'll look for you in the Jindal cabinet.
Oh, no. I have better things to do than that.
We'll be back tomorrow. Stay
okay,
tuned.
Thank you.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.